Welcome to OncLive On Air. I'm your host today, Chris Ryan. OncLive On Air is a podcast from OncLive, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, OncLive covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Alicia Morgans about the evolving role of androgen receptor pathway inhibition in metastatic hormone-sensitive prostate cancer. Dr. Morgans is a physician and medical director of the survivorship program at Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, as well as an associate professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School in Boston, Massachusetts. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Morgans detailed the evolving role of androgen receptor inhibitors in the metastatic hormone-sensitive prostate cancer setting, including the recent expanded approval for darolutamide for this patient population. She discussed treatment considerations for determining whether to give docetaxel along with darolutamide, other factors to remember with androgen receptor inhibition, and the need to continue driving consensus across practices in the management of prostate cancer.
I think it's really important that we have had the advance where we're able to use AR pathway inhibitors in combination with ADT to really improve disease control outcomes, so prolonging the time until progression of disease and certainly prolonging survival in the metastatic hormone-sensitive disease as compared to ADT alone. And I think this advance has been actually particularly important because it allows patients who may not necessarily be fit for more intensive treatment approaches to still have those improvements in their outcomes. We also, of course, have combinations that do include chemotherapy and AR pathway inhibitors, but the challenge there is that not everybody is necessarily going to be fit to really endure chemotherapy, but also people don't necessarily feel that they might be willing to take chemotherapy. So having an array of options, I think, allows us to make sure that we really meet the patient where he is and give options that might be most consistent with what he wants. It's a new approval where we can use ADT and darolutamide without chemotherapy. We've had the combination with chemotherapy for a number of years now. And I think allowing us to not necessarily have to use chemotherapy again just gives us the ability to take care of patients who may not be fit for chemotherapy in a way that is really going to be something that they can tolerate and is going to be consistent with their goals. I also think that it's nice to have multiple options available from an AR pathway inhibitor perspective because different insurances will approve different agents, or patients may have a need to use one agent over another. As an example, if a patient has a history of seizures, then maybe darolutamide is going to be preferred because this isn't something that necessarily crosses the blood-brain barrier and it doesn't appear to increase the risk of seizure. Whereas for people who have already had seizures and may have a high risk, maybe enzalutamide is not going to be the best. At the same time, if people have liver function abnormalities because of the way that darolutamide can affect LFTs and is processed through the liver, this may not be the best option, where enzalutamide doesn't have restrictions around liver function test abnormalities. So maybe that would be the best option in that case. In any event, it's just nice to have options. And it's also really nice to be able to ensure that we can improve disease outcomes, improve and maintain quality of life for patients without necessarily having to have chemotherapy and really, again, meet patients where they are to ensure that everybody has access to the treatments that can make a meaningful difference. This is a really important kind of conversation that we have with our patients about whether patients want to go all in and use ADT, docetaxel, and darolutamide or abiraterone as a triplet type of an approach, or ADT plus just an AR pathway inhibitor. I think a lot of times in clinic, I think about whether a patient's going to be fit for or be able to tolerate chemotherapy, and that's an initial break point. So if a patient can't tolerate chemotherapy or won't be strong enough or fit enough to have chemotherapy, then certainly I wouldn't offer that. But when patients are fit, especially when they're young and otherwise healthy and have a normal organ function and really want to be aggressive, I think that chemotherapy can be an opportunity to have better disease control. The important thing that we still don't know is exactly who will benefit most from chemotherapy, but we have a couple of clues that can be helpful when we're making these decisions in clinic. When patients have de novo metastatic disease, we often think that that cancer may be more aggressive and we may have more sort of bang for our buck when we add chemotherapy in there. And when patients have high volume metastatic disease, I think we also think that these patients may benefit more from that addition of chemotherapy. There are some additional tests that could be done, including perhaps having a high score on a Decipher test, maybe having P10 insufficiency on a Decipher algorithm or through other testing. But these are not prospectively validated, so they are things that give us a clue that these patients may be more likely to respond, but it's not been prospectively tested in large trials to really definitively say, yes, this is the population that will or should benefit. So a lot of this does come down to clinical decision-making, fitness of the patient. And then finally, I would mention patient preferences, because patients sometimes come into clinic with very strong feelings one way or the other regarding the use of chemotherapy. And some patients feel very strongly that they want to throw the kitchen sink at the cancer and be as aggressive as possible. And in those cases, chemotherapy is an easy opportunity for them to really say, you know, I did everything in this particular situation. At the same time, other people might come in and say, well, I have family members who have had really terrible experiences with chemotherapy. And sometimes we're able to talk to them about whether that is a real type of a comparison that should be made, or perhaps is a fear but may not really apply to them. But it's nice either way to be able to say, you know, we do have options that don't necessarily include chemotherapy, and you can have access to that as well. So having the options is really important, and then having shared decisions that ensure that a patient finds the option that's right is also the best way to go, because ultimately we just want to prolong the time until the cancer progresses, and we also want to make sure the patient can tolerate it, and the best mix of that is going to be really individually identified for each patient. I think that clinical trial options are so important regardless of the disease state within the prostate cancer continuum, because they really give a patient an opportunity to not only benefit in terms of their own health, but really contribute to the larger knowledge base that helps us understand how to best take care of people like them in the future. And many people, I think, really believe in that process and really feel value in contributing in that way. But when it comes to decision-making in settings like metastatic hormone-sensitive prostate cancer, it's really important that whatever the control arm is in that trial, that it is the standard of care. And in many cases, we have the control arm being that standard of care, and then we add additional therapies onto the standard of care to see if more can be helpful in terms of getting better outcomes. In some cases, though, we actually subtract from that standard of care to see if less is enough and that we can get the same outcomes with that less intensive approach and maybe less toxic approach. So there is absolutely still room to grow and to better understand the metastatic hormone-sensitive space, and clinical trials that help us do that, including ones that are based on biomarkers and molecular testing, can be really, really informative for the patients of tomorrow, so that they can make decisions that are not only consistent with what they wish to do in terms of preferences for avoiding or taking different therapies, but are also really based in the biologic aspects of what drives the cancer and what helps that cancer respond better or maybe not as well to different therapies. So very, very important work that still needs to be done. And I'm really grateful for the patients and certainly all of my colleagues and other investigators who are trying to answer some of these important questions. I think one of the most important things that we talked about in terms of clinical trials and understanding the future when it comes to metastatic hormone-sensitive prostate cancer was the controversy over the contribution or the lack of contribution of docetaxel in the triplet regimen. And so there are studies that are trying to understand if people respond really well to initial ADT and AR pathway inhibitor therapy, do they necessarily need chemotherapy? Or if they don't respond as well, can we randomize that population to have chemotherapy to see if they can have a deeper response, or continue a control arm that really just continues to have ADT and an AR pathway inhibitor? And understanding that relative contribution of chemotherapy and perhaps adapting our therapies around the patient's disease response after a period of time when we have the opportunity to get to understand how effective a given therapy might be in that individual is going to be a key part of understanding how to best take care of prostate cancer. And then, of course, all of the molecular testing, the ctDNA testing, the tumor tissue testing, the patient germline genetic testing will also come into play so that, again, we understand that best intersection between cancer response, patient genetic factors, and how all of that really responds in the face of different therapies. The BTG meeting was so helpful in terms of helping us really hash out what was important, what we might have at least consensus on, and where we still need to go in terms of defining what's best and what best practices might be for the future. But I also think that it was a wonderful meeting in terms of giving us hope that there's a lot of enthusiasm, there's a lot of great minds, there are many great minds that are still trying to answer some of these questions and really just try to get to the bottom of what it is to treat people with prostate cancer and to do it in the way that makes the most sense and is the most effective.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates on oncology, be sure to visit onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On X and Blue Sky, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you like today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms, so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.